Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Qantas Airways Limited Investor Briefing. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star two. If you're on a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Alan Joyce, CEO. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Taylor, and good morning, everyone, and thanks for joining us on this call. Now, hopefully, you've had a chance to read through our announcement and the presentations. I would like to make some broad comments, then Vanessa will speak to some of the highlights from our presentation, and then we're very happy to take some questions. Today, we made some very significant announcements about the proactive measures to accelerate the group's recovery from the impacts of COVID-19 and to build a stronger future for the national carrier. As you're aware, airlines globally have been severely impacted by travel restrictions and border closures. Even the world's largest carriers are taking extreme action just to survive. The Qantas Group entered the crisis with a strong balance sheet and significant financial flexibility, better than most airlines. We acted quickly to secure the future of the business, safely grounding the fleet and moving to cash preservation mode. Our strong balance sheet and investment-grade credit rating allowed us to further boost our liquidity by raising $1.75 billion in debt at competitive rates and with no financial covenants. These actions will allow the group to end the financial year in a solid position. And we expect to report a break-even to small underlying profit before tax for financial year 20, a great result despite the unprecedented impact of COVID-19, supported by strong performance from Qantas Loyalty and Qantas Freight. But comprehensive action is needed to face the structural changes we are now facing in the market. And the demand environment is uncertain, so we need to retain operational flexibility to respond to a range of outcomes. Today we are announcing our 3-year recovery plan to do just that. The plan has 3 immediate focus areas, targeting $15 billion in cost savings over 3 years to partially offset the reduction in revenue as a result of the impact of COVID-19. The first is to right-size our workforce, fleet and capital spending for a world that has been that will see less flying for an extended period. This includes extending the stand-down for a large number of our people who we don't have work for right now, but know we will as recovery gains with momentum. First, as we believe in the domestic market, and then with the international recovery expected to take longer. We will ground the A380 fleets for this foreseeable future and pause delivery of the A321neos and the 787 fleets until the group recovers. The second item is restructuring to deliver permanent savings across the group's operation in this changed market. This is estimated to be $1 billion in annual ongoing benefits from financial year 23. This crisis has been the hardest on our people, and regrettably, more difficult decisions have to be made. Ultimately, we will be a smaller business and we must adjust our cost structures to suit, to save as many jobs as possible in the long term, meaning a number of redundancies are necessary. And the third action is recapitalizing through an equity raise that will strengthen our balance sheet and accelerate our recovery. We're seeking to raise $1.36 billion of equity through a fully underwritten institutional placement and up to $500 million non-underwritten share purchase plan. The funds raised will support the recovery plan, strengthen the balance sheet, and improve the group's financial flexibility in line with its financial framework. It will accelerate the recovery and position Qantas to capitalise on opportunities aligned with its strategy. The combined right-sizing, restructuring and recapitalisation is expected to position Qantas to adapt to a changed operating environment and enable an accelerated recovery post-COVID-19. And I am committed to seeing the company through the recovery phase and back to profitable growth. Now I'm going to hand over to Vanessa to take you through a bit more of the detail included in the presentation. Vanessa?
Thanks, Alan. Turning to the investor presentation we lodged with the ASX this morning, I'm not proposing to do a full page turn, but rather I'd like to highlight some key points. For those of you that have followed Qantas, you'll know that transformation has been a strong part of our business model and our DNA for many years. On page 7, you can see that over the past 5 years, we have delivered $3.2 billion in benefits across a wide range of cost, revenue and fuel efficiency initiatives. As I said, transformation has become our way of life, the way we do business, and it will continue to be a part of our DNA going forward. And this is similar to the financial framework now that has been in place for some time. We've shown that on slide 8. It has served us well. We have delivered 5 years of solid profit, strengthened our balance sheet through that time, and reinvested in the business and returned over $4 billion to shareholders. It was the thing that has placed us in a strong position going into this pandemic. And it has guided our decisions as we've pursued our recovery plan and what we are announcing today, and will continue to guide our decisions going forward. So today we are launching this recovery plan from a strong position due to the decisive actions that we have taken to minimise and mitigate the impact that COVID has had on our business. And as Alan said, we expect to deliver a break-even to a small underlying profit before tax for FY20, supported by strong performance from Qantas Loyalty and also Qantas Freight. At the statutory level, we will be recognising a number of items outside of underlying, totalling about $2.8 billion. The majority of these will be non-cash, including the impairment of the A380s, which we expect to be grounded for the foreseeable future. You will also see we have taken the decision to revoke the interim dividend. When we deferred the dividend some months ago, we kept our options open should we see a quicker rebound in demand. But the recovery scenarios remain uncertain and the impact on our people is profound. So we are taking the difficult decision today to revoke the dividend. Now looking ahead to the actions we're announcing today. Slide 13 shows the phasing and the splits of the benefits from the recovery plan. As Alan said, we expect to deliver $15 billion in benefits over 3 years to offset the impact of the fall in revenue due to the COVID-19 crisis. This includes $2.4 billion of restructuring benefits, $2.6 billion in right-sizing initiatives, $4 billion in direct activity savings, and $6 billion in fuel savings over the 3 years. But I want to draw your attention to the $1 billion in ongoing restructuring benefits. This is our key to our future and return to profitable growth. We will be permanently reducing our cost base from these initiatives, becoming more efficient, flexible and productive. And we expect the costs to achieve the restructuring and the right-sizing benefits of $1 billion. The third plank of the recovery plan is the recapitalisation through this equity raise. Today we are seeking to raise $1.36 billion of equity through a fully underwritten institutional placement and up to $500 million non-underwritten share purchase plan. Following the equity raise, we will improve our liquidity position to about $4.6 billion and reduce our net debt level to $4.6 billion. And now I'll hand back to Alan.
Thanks, Vanessa. In closing, we are taking decisive action to maintain our strong financial position, as we have clearly done over the last decade. Our three-year recovery plan is expected to generate significant cost savings and cash flow benefits. We are well-positioned to succeed in a post-COVID world through our leading position in the Australian domestic market and the leading Australian airline program we take anywhere in the globe. We will be fitter, leaner business as a result of these actions we have taken and that we have announced today. We will be ready to meet the changing competitive and demand environment. So thank you for joining this call today, and we now open it to your questions.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Your first question comes from Matt Ryan from UBS. Please go ahead.
Hey, Matt.
Hi, Alan. The first question I had was just on the liquidity position. I think last time you updated the market, you said you were pretty confident about that position, I think, into the end of calendar 2021, assuming no pickup in activity. So can you just talk about the outlook that you're seeing now and I guess what's changed since then?
Yes, so Matt, I'll start and Vanessa will come in. We're not concerned about our liquidity position because we still have that bandwidth to get through till the end of 21. And with the equity raising, this takes us well into the end of 22, given the current circumstances of no borders opening up. The reason for the equity raising is to clearly help us accelerate the transformation that we think is a once in a generational opportunity to do that. We essentially have an airline that we're starting from scratch. When I was appointed the CEO of Jetstar, it's amazing what you can do when you start an airline up that didn't exist before and how efficient you can make it. And we've been approaching it in this way. But in order to do that, we do need to have, and we've said in this plan, up to $1 billion to help with the restructuring of the business and accelerate that. And that gives us an ongoing benefit, we believe, of $1 billion a year. These are changes that will benefit shareholders into the long term. And now is the time for us to do that and to accelerate it. And this equity raiser helps us manage that change, implement that change, and introduce it as fast as possible. So the group is probably the best, even before this, the best positioned airline in terms of liquidity. We're also having confidence that the borders will open. I mean, debate now is probably about weeks or maybe almost a month or so in how some of the borders will open up in Australia. And we're very confident that there is a massive pent-up demand. And we've gotten even more confidence after the Jetstar sale last week. Jetstar went on sale and Qantas went on sale. Both had an unbelievable reaction to it on Friday. I think we've mentioned that Jetstar in normal times takes 10 bookings a minute before COVID-19. In a sale, it could get to 100, but that's unusual. Last week, we got to over 200 bookings a minute. It was the biggest sale in Jetstar's history. There's a lot of pent-up demand. And even before that, we were seeing people speculating on when the borders actually open up. And with the suggestion the Queensland borders opened up from the 10th of July, we had people filling up all of our flights from Sydney to Cairns, and we had to add extra flights there. And we know with the outbound market, which is a massive market, not being able to travel internationally for some time, they're going to holiday here in Australia, and we think that will also allow us to have a big boost. So the numbers that we said in terms of liquidity that would get us to the end of 21 assumed that we were going to be burning $40 million a week. And with these borders and the great success that's happened in COVID-19 here domestically, we believe that that $40 million will significantly come down and we can get the domestic market into positive cash flows. And we have loyalty already in positive cash flows and we have freight in positive cash flows. So with the combination of all of those, the runway has gotten longer and probably significantly longer. And with the equity raise, it's a lot longer. But we would like to do the equity to reposition ourselves and take these significant changes that will produce significant benefits for the group in the longer term. And we think the window's now, and we want to do it now. Vanessa?
Yeah, I just reflecting on what Alan said. You know, in May when we talked about the 40 million cash burn through to the end of 21, you know, that was on the basis of recovery not starting, and also that we were in a permanent state of hibernation. In since then, and I think the one thing that we've realised throughout this entire COVID pandemic is that the dynamic nature of the market and the environment has required us to constantly be on the front foot and be very proactive in managing how the group emerges from this. So just reiterating what Alan said, and in the last month we've been seeing the recovery emerge, firstly in domestic and more long-term in international. But we have worked right across the organisation with all leadership teams to come up with the recovery plan. And then the $1 billion of permanent restructuring savings that we are going to set about to implement is going to be a key part of how we set the organisation up for success. And the equity raise today enables us to accelerate that recovery, be very proactive and do that, as Alan said, in the window that we are in now, to get on with that quickly. It's going to enable us to be in a position where we've got the financial flexibility to manage in what is going to be an uncertain environment for some time, and also in a dynamic competitive environment domestically. But most importantly, it's going to create the platform for us to return to profitability and growth in the future. I think as well, just before concluding on that, we will not and do not plan to be drawing our undrawn revolvers. They are still there at $1 billion. We still have 2.7 billion of unencumbered aircraft. And across all of our debt, we have no financial covenants in place. So in terms of our liquidity and balance sheet strength off the back of this equity raise, we feel like we are going to be in a very strong position to be able to manage flexibly and dynamically in the months ahead.
Thanks, Vanessa. Next question.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Anthony Mulder from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Hey, Anthony.
Good morning, all. I just want to be very clear about that $1 billion cost savings that Vanessa was just talking about from fiscal 23. Is the best way to think about that on a CASK ex-fuel basis, cut by a level that equates to $1 billion on an FY20 terms?
No, I think that we're not applying an activity dimension to it. We're targeting $1 billion on an absolute basis for delivery in FY23. And if you actually want to put an activity lens over it, page 12 of the investor pack highlights there that in FY23 we will still not be back to pre-COVID levels on a group basis, because the international business, the base assumption is that we will still be in recovery. So domestically we'll be back to 100%, but international will not. So any further growth or return of capacity will result in that value of that billion increasing in the future period. So we're targeting the billion on an absolute basis.
And Anthony, just to give you some colour on some of the initiatives, I've actually got a lot more confidence on this program than we had on the program in 13 at this stage, because in 13 we said we were going to do 2 billion in savings over the 3 years. There were a lot of probably lower hanging fruit back then. We overachieved that. Our details on the plans about what we can get here are certainly more formulated, and we have a very high level of confidence that we'll deliver on them, and we have a record of delivering on them. One of them is we are approaching this as an airline starting up again. Like when we started Jetstar, when we did that, when I did that with the team back in 2004 and 2005, it's a great opportunity when you don't have an airline flying to be able to make some significant changes. We're looking, as an example, on back office of taking up to 30% of people out, which changes a lot of processes and procedures. We're building it from scratch. We are looking at things like how we do our ground handling, how we build efficiencies in there. We're doing a big project on our engineering bases. We have a big Sydney base here that has three separate workforces that work on different things. We're collapsing that together. There's 11 different rosters in that group. It's very inefficient, and we're putting that together. There's a number, 400 to 500 redundancies as a result of that. And we believe with that reduction could maintain the entire fleet that we have today. And they're things you can't do, I think, in some ways in normal times. They are the things that you can do when you're starting an airline up from scratch. So we believe that those benefits are real, are significant, and can be delivered.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Anthony Longo from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Hey, Anthony.
G'day, Alan. Good morning, Alan. Good morning, Vanessa and team. Look, just a quick one from me. I just wanted to have a chat about the financial framework, and it obviously has served you well over the past 10 or so years. But I guess what I'm trying to think about now is you've gone through a period where you've almost repurchased a third of your share base, but now you're raising that equity. I'm just trying to get a sense as to, firstly, do you think that framework is now appropriate over the longer term, given the inherent volatility in aviation that we are seeing? And then the second prong to that is the dividend comment. I mean, I take your comments on the recovery for domestic and also international, but assuming that recovery follows those scenarios that you have built, is there an expectation that you will return to paying dividends in 21 and 22?
So the financial framework, in my view, is more important than ever moving forward. It has created a really structured way of us to think about capital allocation decisions and going forward. It, in my view, I think it will continue to be a very important way in which we think about our capital structure, and we'll continue to live by that going forward. In terms of dividends, I think just specifically dealing with the revocation of the dividend, you know, we've seen the impact that COVID has had since February and the impact on our financial position and the feasibility of us paying that dividend is currently not there. And again, that would be determined very much by the financial framework. We also won't have franking credits in the foreseeable future either. So given the impact on our people, we think that that decision has been appropriate. And going forward, in terms of applying the financial framework to distribution of surplus in the future, as we know, the financial framework is a forward-looking framework, and on an ongoing basis, we will make decisions of future distributions according to that. At the outset, though, our focus is going to be on balance sheet strength and repairing and paying debt down. We also will be making sure that through that framework that we make decisions to reinvest in the business for growth and growth in profitability, and should at that point as well surplus be available, and we will be making future distribution decisions based on that.
I gotta say, I may add, I mean, what we're going through is a once in a 100 year event, and you can't use that for assuming that that's going to be the norm going forward. Yet the airline industry has a constant shock syndrome, that the shocks occur, but we over the last good few years have seen them, various things occurring, volcanoes erupting, various markets closed down, implications happening with aerospace closing down, and we've coped with them as they've happened and still distributed over $4 billion to shareholders in that period of time. I think this is not the norm. It's an exceptional circumstances. The framework has allowed us to have the strength to get through this and has allowed us to return money to shareholders framework works, and when we have surplus capital again, we will return it to shareholders, and I think that is our commitment. We've delivered that in the past. We have a good track record of doing it, and at the moment, we're asking the shareholders essentially to contribute some of that money back to get us through this one in a 100-year event, which will end. And when it does end, given the strategic position of where the group is domestically with loyalty and the opportunities we have with things like Project Sunrise, I think the future of this group looks extremely bright, brighter than any other airline on the globe. And it will generate, and it has in the past, generated significant free cash flows. And we know those significant free cash flows, when we look at the financial framework, will go back to shareholders at the appropriate time after the appropriate investments.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Paul Butler from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Hey, Paul.
Hi, Alan. I just wanted to ask about the guidance you've given for the loyalty business. Because obviously, you know, loyalty I'd expect to be, you know, one of the more resilient businesses that you've got. If I take the midpoint of the guidance for EBIT to be down 5 to 10% in FY20, that suggests, given that the first half was quite strong, that the second half was down 25% year on year. And if I sort of assume that more of that was weighted to the fourth quarter, you know, looking at something, you know, approaching 50% decline in EBIT for the fourth quarter. So I'm just wondering what's driving that and how we think about that going forward.
Yeah, sure. It's Vanessa. I think the loyalty business and that result for the loyalty business is a great result at the outset. But you are right that that business has not been immune from the impact from COVID. What we have seen and where that business has been impacted is in two areas. One, in terms of financial services, and for a period of time, whilst the majority of Australians were at home in isolation, we did see that credit card spend did dip. And most interestingly, though, we've actually seen it dip for a period of time but has now rebounded. As Alan, and to reiterate what Alan was saying in terms of that pent-up demand, we have seen that activity and that spending start to return. So the loyalty business and the billings from credit cards was impacted by that. And then the second part of that business is that we do have travel-related products in loyalty that, again, reasonably have been impacted from the isolation and also the border restrictions, including Qantas Hotel, Qantas Travel Insurance, and also the travel money parts of our business. But I think in the outset as well, we've been in a constant communication and with our customers, and we've done recent surveys that have been very pleasing to us. We have seen consistent, very high engagement from members. We are also seeing members continuing to say to us that they are striving to earn points for that aspirational trip in the future, and interestingly, pointing international as being a key part of that aspiration. So I think what we're very optimistic about is the resilience in that business, and expect to see that performance return in FY21. In the first and the second half of FY21.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Jacob Kakanis from Citi. Please go ahead.
Hey, Jake.
Morning, guys. I've got one question with two parts. So the first part of the question is, the cost savings that you've announced this morning, are they relative to the FY19 cost base? And how should we think about that, including the transformation that you've already announced that you've delivered in FY20? And then the second part of the question is, the cost savings for FY21, how contingent those are on JobKeeper continuing, given what you've released in the announcement this morning?
Yes, so the cost savings are relative to the cost base from FY21 on a pre-COVID level. So I think that that is the assumption to make there. When you actually think of the restructuring and right-sizing initiatives, so the restructuring initiatives, as we said, are focused on delivering permanent savings off that cost base. The right-sizing initiatives are looking to reduce our cost and variabilise our cost, particularly our workforce and our consumption, whilst our activity is low. But as activity comes back, we would expect those costs to come back. The prime example of that is that, as we flagged in our announcement this morning, that we will have a number of our workforce on a continuing and extended stand down basis. We expect that work will return as capacity returns, so that cost will flow back in proportion to that capacity. Did you have another question, Jake, that I've...
It was on the JobKeeper.
Oh, the JobKeeper, yeah.
Yeah, and I might say on that, Jake, we're assuming, we have asked the government to look at JobKeeper or another alternative form. That's for our people. That doesn't go into our cost savings. That's there essentially to assume that we will be continuing to stand down people irrespective of that, and it's just to help them get through this. And that's an alternative mechanism. We've assumed in the plan that JobKeeper is there till September, but it's not really, it's in a separate category. It's not really there as part of the $1 billion that we're going to save. The $1 billion doesn't include any continuing support in that category.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Cameron McDonald from ENP. Please go ahead.
Hey, Cameron.
Morning, Alan and Vanessa. Couple of sort of related questions on the permanent reduction of the $1 billion. Is that a replacement of the transformation program? And obviously, under the transformation program, that was partially to offset cost inflation. So, is the $1 billion going to be inclusive or exclusive of cost inflation? And what do you think that cost inflation number should look like going forward?
So from our perspective, the definition for us for transformation includes both the right sizing and the restructuring. Both are very substantial pieces of activity that we will be doing to variabilise our costs. I'm sure that you can appreciate that that's an enormous undertaking across both workforce and also suppliers. And also the restructuring is a key part of delivering that ongoing permanent saving. So it is excluding price increases as well. So what we're assuming through this plan is that we will have minimum offset of all of those price increases across both our supply base and also across our labour force as well.
We will be, our view has been that, of course, it's very inappropriate for us to be looking at pay increases while the company's gone through this recovery phase, which, as you know, is what we did back in 2013. So there will be some elements of offsetting inflation while we are doing the recovery that are not included in the $1 billion.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Owen Burrell from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hey, hi, Alan and Vanessa. Look, just a quick question for me on the $1 billion of long-term benefits. Can you give us a sense of how much of that is led by the permanent staff reductions, and then how much of it was actually already in the $400 million of transformation benefits that you look to achieve every year beyond this point? So how much of that cost benefit has actually been brought forward?
I think that you can say, and it goes back to the point that Alan made in the beginning, is that the way in which we have sized this benefit is taking a zero-based approach to how we recover and how we build up. So a substantial amount of that is the restructuring activity that we can see across a number of those areas that Alan mentioned, engineering, ground handling, and also our cabin crew workforce. So Of that $400 million that we have been previously tracking, this is going to be new initiatives that that we can see as we rebuild from this unique position that we've got, where we've got the airline on the ground, we're coming out of hibernation. It just presents a completely different set of opportunities to drive efficiency and productivity as we recover.
And some of the previous 400, a large element of them actually, were around revenue-based initiatives. We're doing things like personalization and the revenue management system that we have. And we think we haven't included that, obviously, in the benefits, but we think there are opportunities, particularly with Virgin coming out of administration and the business model that they pick, for us to accelerate some of those benefits in areas like the SME market and potentially the corporate market, depending on what business model that is there. So there are some other upsides that I think are unique to us in this market, and we think we're in a good position to take advantage of them as that administration process ends.
Thank you. Your next question comes from David Fabrice from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Hi, Alan. Hi, Vanessa. I've just got two questions on international. Firstly, with the uncertainty on international, are you able to help us understand the weekly or monthly cash burn, isolating that business? And then secondly, can you talk us through how you see international recovering? You've set out that 50% of capacity should be backed by FY22. But, I mean, which countries do you see flights to opening up initially, and when do you expect to see your major routes coming back online as well?
Yeah, sure. So when you actually look at international, a substantial amount of our cost for that business is going to be a depreciation, and that is obviously non-cash. We don't have a separate burn for international that we are managing to. We're doing that across the group. But clearly, a substantial amount of the initiatives that we are looking to in terms of right-sizing and also the ongoing transformation will be directed to reducing the cost base of international for both Qantas and also Jetstar. What was the second part of your question?
Yeah, sorry. So the second part of the question was just talking us through that international recovery. 50% of capacity is back on by 22. Which countries do you see opening up first, and when do you get back all your major routes?
Yeah, so I think that we are taking what we believe is a realistic view in the plan for international returning, based on where our conversations are with the government and also what we see as the changes to the border restrictions internationally. In the short term, what we are planning is that we do believe that we will see a bubble emerge between Australia and New Zealand. We're hopeful that that will occur before the end of this calendar year. Those routes, though, will be served by 737 and narrow body aircraft in the main, or maybe some 330s. That market in particular, though, is a very sizable holiday market for both Australians and New Zealand holidaying in either country. So we're very optimistic that when that occurs that there will be strong demand from both points of sale. Though more broadly, if we're looking beyond New Zealand, we are not, I think, at this point in time making any specific decisions about which countries open when, because that will be very much dependent upon when the government restrictions lift. What our base assumption is that we are ready to resume flying very quickly. That flying will start with the narrow body or the 787 and 330 aircraft. Those aircraft are a much more efficient aircraft to deploy first. It will enable us to build more point-to-point and frequency into both the UK, Asia, and also the US. We think that that's very important. We think that those aircraft are sized more appropriately for a market that is recovering. Clearly, the 789s are half the size of the 380s. That then results in the 380s being grounded for a significant period of time and for the foreseeable future as we re-establish the international fleet with those more efficient units.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Niraj Shah from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hey, Niraj.
Morning, Alan and Vanessa. Just a couple of quick ones for me. First one, just previously you've indicated that you'd only add services if they're at least cash flow break-even. Just wanted to confirm whether that's still the intention for both domestic and international. And secondly, just wanted to get a sense of, appreciate all the color so far on the restructuring benefits, but just the extent to which they're cash versus non-cash.
Yeah, so I might answer the first one and then Vanessa the second one. We're very committed that as we add capacity back in the air, that it's cash flow positive. And even when we looked at last week, Jetstar selling airfares as low as $19, that was typically half of what the airfares were prior to COVID-19. We had a $38 airfare on Melbourne-Sydney as an example. And across, Jetstar obviously doesn't sell all of its fares at those lower levels, but across the board we actually calculated the cash burn on each flight and what the level of availability in each of these classes would be and what would be cash flow positive. So we know we need to stimulate the market at the start, get people excited about traveling again, but we'll only do that with a positive cash outcome. And even with those airfares, the Jetstar aircraft that go in the air, those 200 bookings that were sold every minute, which is one aircraft, those aircraft will be cash flow positive in the air at those levels. So we're very comfortable on that. It's very tightly managed. And we did, 6 months ago, Vanessa and the team, change the whole approach to the company of having a cash focus. We do have a P&L focus, obviously, as well, but we have set everything up to manage cash, and you can't imagine the detail we go to look after every cent. I had an airline CEO from Europe chatting to them, and they were saying they were extremely impressed by how low Qantas's cash burn has become. Said it's probably the most impressive number in the industry out there, at the $40 million a week. We're not going to lose that discipline on that, and we are very keen that as we get the aircraft back in the air, they will reduce that $40 million, and our plan is that that will happen, and that the more of the domestic operation we get back in, the more we digest the $40 and get the positive cash flows, and our belief is if the domestic market continues the way we expect it, the Victorian hiccup is overcome pretty soon, and we will get into positive cash flows easily in the domestic market. We have them in loyalty, we have them in freight, and that can get the group back to positive cash flows, even with an international business not flying. The international business, with the stand downs, with everything else we're doing on cash preservation, will still lose money, but that money is non-cash. It's the depreciation on the existing assets, particularly the 787s and some of the infrastructure that we have in lounges and the like. Vanessa?
Yeah, look, just to reiterate Alan's points there, we have been solely focused on ensuring that through both managing in the COVID period, but also in the recovery period, that we are focused in ensuring that we are cash flow positive in all the network decisions that we make going forward. And to answer your question on the restructuring benefits, they are predominantly cash.
Thank you. Your next question comes from Scott Ryall from Rimor Equity Research. Please go ahead.
Hey, Scott.
Hi there. Thank you very much for the call. I was wondering if you could just give me a little bit more detail as to the discussions you have on your leased aircraft. Obviously, you've got a lot parked up at the moment. What are the leaseholders? What are the discussions look like in terms of trying to figure out, you know, where you want to be in 2 or 3 years' time with those discussions? And then I guess the other question, which is related, is how you guys have been, I think, quite early in terms of using the stand down provisions. How long can they last for? What are you thinking in terms of how long a stand down can last for? Thank you. That was my two.
I'll take the first question on leasing. I think one of the benefits that the Qantas Group has is that we have very little aircraft leased. Qantas Airlines has, I think, no more than 5 aircraft, and Jetstar have a handful more than that. So I think that has been a key benefit for the Qantas Group in managing through the crisis. We, and rather than going into the confidential parts of our discussions with lessors, we've had great support from lessors. They have worked with us particularly in the hibernation phase to defer payments in particular. But we are currently looking at two things. One is as we emerge and restore our cash flow to how we've managed in the past, our preference is to buy our aircraft rather than to lease them. I think it's demonstrated through the reserves that we've actually had in our unencumbered aircraft base, how important that is in terms of balance sheet strength coming into this, and that won't change once we return to the strong cash that this business has proven to generate in the past. Albeit though that we have flagged in our announcement today that with the lower capacity in the forward view that we see, that there may be some opportunities for us to return some of those leases, and we have a number of leases falling due in the next 12 to 18 months. So we will be reviewing that and making the most economic decision at the time.
And I think that's a good point on the leases, because we have a large number of leases coming up in that period of time. It gives us a lot of leverage to say, because there's probably not going to be much of a market out there given it's a worldwide issue. And it gives us a lot of flexibility with the leasers to say how do we manage those leases in that period of time and what we do around those aircraft. So we're probably in a very unique position on that. And I have to say, Vanessa and the team did a great job with Boeing and Airbus to make arrangements so that we're not taking the additional 787s and the 320neos that were due this year until we see a Qantas recovery. And it shows you the strong brand, strong relationship with both Airbus and Boeing. And we're very complimentary. I've talked to both CEOs. They are very focused on maintaining a strong relationship with us, and it's given us a huge amount of flexibility in the past, and it continues to do so. And Airbus have given us flexibility on the decision on Sunrise. I'm still very keen on it. Our people are very keen on it. We'll only do it when we have the right financial strength on it, but we now have some time before we have to make a call on that, and I think that's a good sign. And in relation to the stand downs apply related to a blockage of work and when there's no useful work for the individuals to do. The stand down that we see applying is really focused on the international business, and clearly with the borders closed internationally, clearly with the restrictions on quarantine for people coming in, there is a blockage of work and there is no useful work for those employees. So we will still be using the same provisions, and we will continue to put them in place as long as we don't have an international operation. And we're working then with the unions when the international operation starts again about whether we can get some changes, for example, with the pilots, get some changes to the arrangements so that we share the work, because it's not going to come back 100%. It's going to come back in phases. And we need to get an arrangement, which we have domestically, where we can reduce the errors of all of the pilots and everybody shares the work. We're hoping that we can have some of those agreements on international. If we don't, we'll just keep more people stood down during that period. So we're just working through that, as we say. But we still think stand down is available to us, given the nature of the lack of useful work for the employees. I think we have a last question.
Thank you. Your last question comes from Ian Miles from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Thanks, guys. Just really quickly, I thought I took it off, but FY23, if you think about the international business, how much smaller will it probably look from where it is from that peak of FY19?
So I'm still, by the time we get to FY23, we think that we'll have a large proportion of the international business up. If there's a vaccine found or other treatments found, it could be more than we've built into the plan. Because of the way we're approaching, as Vanessa talked earlier, with the 787s coming back, we think we can operate an extensive international operation because we just won't have the big A380s flying to places like LA or London, but we could have LA, London, and maybe Chicago, which was doing really well in sales before COVID, New York, South America, South Africa. So we try with these smaller aircraft, which have got greater capability, have a brand new product on board to get as much of that international market together as we can. As Vanessa said, a lot depends on how each of these countries manage COVID-19 and how comfortable the government is open up its borders. A vaccine or a treatment is a game changer. That could happen faster than we're expecting. If it does, there's upside to the plan. If it doesn't, then I think we have the appropriate vehicle to manage the demand that we see with the 787s and the 330s.
Thank you. There are no further questions at this time. I'll now hand back to Mr. Joyce for closing remarks.
Well, can I thank everybody for joining us today? As you know, I mean, this is the toughest period I think the aviation industry has gone through in its over 100-year history. I think what you can see is that Qantas is in one of the best positions of any airline on the globe, given our loyalty program, our domestic market, our two brands here domestically, the position our major competitor is in, at the very successful control of COVID-19 in the Australian market with significant upside to get that business up and running and get it back to the position we had pre-COVID-19 very rapidly and get it on track to deliver the targets we set for ourselves in terms of the margin that business could get before COVID-19. We're still very up to belief. There's obviously a pause on some of the growth that we're expecting on loyalty, but we're also convinced that we can get loyalty to the targets we set before COVID-19. And then the issue for us is managing the international business. And we think parking the A380s, writing down the aircraft, standing down the people until the work comes back allows us to manage that business until it can start again and to minimise the cash burn. A lot of the cost associated with it on the ground will be non-cash items. And we are optimistic that we do have the right vehicles in the 787s or the 330s to take advantage of that market as it recovers and to establish a comprehensive network as fast as possible. We are optimistic about our future. We think that this plan is a comprehensive plan. The equity raising will help us accelerate it. It can give once in a generation changes to our cost base. This wouldn't have happened if we hadn't had an airline on the ground. We're doing it because we're seeing the airline as starting from scratch. We're treating it in a very different way than we would in the transformation program we had in 2013. We think that gives significant shareholder value to our shareholders in the next few years that will be there and will be permanent. And that gives us confidence that we hope when we get through this, have re-established the financial strength, have re-established our position, and that we will have the confidence to do huge opportunities like Sunrise, like the continued investment in the loyalty program and the opportunities to continue to supercharge them. And the equity raise helps us accelerate that and get through that as fast as possible. So thank you very much, everybody, for joining us. I know we're going to have some conversations with people during the day, and I look forward to speaking to you with Vanessa individually as we get through the day.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.